Session number 16718, Major Wilfred White, Reel 19.
Mr. White, Reel 19. So you're promoted to captain, and where did you go?
Well, I virtually stayed at the school. This was at Barnard Castle. And the camp itself was just outside Barnard Castle. And, of course, the training grounds there were the Boers, for which Barnard Castle is famous.
Were you training young people for D-Day and after?
Oh, I would think so. They were the people that I was in contact with. It was the same course that I'd been on, the course. They were up to major in rank. There was one or two half-colonels, lieutenant colonels, on the course. But I remember the first squad I had the Royal Marine, the cricketer, Trevor Bailey. He was a lieutenant in the Marines. I had the younger Lascelles, Harry Grigg, the War Office, whoever he was, that used to sign some of the documents. His son was with us in my squad, and Hubert Doggett of the Grenadier Guards he was in, and they're all about the same age.
But they had no battle experience at this point.
No, they'd done their primary training. And
the quality of these young officers coming through for training, was it very good?
Well, I thought so. Oh, yes. As far as you could tell, you know, they were very, you know, they all had command of themselves, if that's a... and they were all very good material. And, of course, Nat Keane.
How long did each course last?
About 6 weeks.
Similar to the one that you had already done?
Yes. And my job was to see every instructor had some phase of war, of the battle. Whether it was in attack or defense or changing a position in the box, in the line, patrolling, had to become the specialist for that subject, mostly from an administrative point of view, really, to supervise the arrangements of the patrolling or the defencing, to see that everything is there that you need, you know, because the troops had done all these things time and time again. They knew exactly, but somebody had to see that it all moved, and I got that for patrolling. And then it's a case of listening to what they're saying, see if they've picked up the lessons. Then you'd go out and do patrolling, and again, watching what they do and how they did it. And
we're using the demonstration battalion, was it? Or demonstration
company? Yeah, well, we've got past that stage now, you see. There was a demonstration that were done. But then you went and did a patrol yourself as part of the subject of patrolling. You had to find your way about and do various things. And it was a case of sitting with your squad and sorting out the bugs and the obvious things that might not have worked. And so it went on. And I remember I had a, when you got up, you know, and you were explaining it, whatever was the point of your talk, the door was open, and in would come the red tape around the hats, and I, gosh, it was an ordeal. I found that great ordeal, but I liked what I was doing.
Did you meet anyone high ranking who came to visit you?
No higher than a brigadier, and I met the boys who were left after Arnhem. Bruce Browning introduced to him, and I think he was the. But Montgomery or Churchill didn't come through the door, not while I was there.
And we are in this situation, this training situation, for the rest of the your time in the army.
Virtually, yes. We did. I did two courses there. No. I did about a year, it must have been. Then I went down to North Wales to help open a school for the junior ranks, junior officers. Because they'd been through the OCTU training, then they could either go, well, they went to their units and then had to do some specialist training. And of course, at round about this time, the fitness, we weren't fit enough, was the cry from the army. And in North Wales, Llanberis, Snowdon, we had to get them cracking up the mountainside and do our fire and movement and with live ammunition, you see, which was a novelty for most of them. They'd done much of the training before, but not keep your head down or you get hit sort of thing. So it was. Was scary, more scary than marathon at times, I don't mind telling you.
Were there accidents?
Oh, there were accidents, yes. But not many. Not many. Once it was realized that it was deadly serious.
Had the battle school a name or a number?
No, I got the name. It was School of Infantry Junior Ranks or something like that. First of all, at North Wales, then it moved down to South Wales.
Were you still holding the rank of captain?
Yes, I had for a short while the rank of major. Was I sort of held the fort while they were looking about for their new chief instructor. It was just about my time for demob. And I had to keep the training program going virtually.
So this training went right through 44 into 45?
Oh, yes. I can't remember. Yes, 45.
Does the quality of the young men that you were getting as this period went on, when manpower was becoming a problem, did it fall at all? Were you kind of scraping the barrel?
I was never aware of the barrel being scraped, to be fair. Now, admittedly, I had squads of French platoons sent over, a whole platoon. Rather than the individual officer. there should be 30 or 40 individual officers, if you know what I mean, is what I'm trying to say. They're all the same rank. Dutch, English, of course. But there's the one thing you could, if the one thing I could say was that the standard was always pretty good. You just get terrified with the French, you know, because they do fire and movement. But you're advancing that way and the fire that way, shooting in between your legs, you know, the sort of thing. It is it's a bit scary. But, oh, so fit. So fit. Fittest I've been in my life.
This brings us up to where now? Are we, is this the end of the war that we've come to?
No, the end of my war. We hadn't had D-Day yet. But, had we? Oh, come on, be sensible. Of course we'd had D-Day.
We'd moved from Barnet Castle to North Wales.
That's right, and then to South Wales.
And to South Wales.
But, the only way I can work this out is I had 39 years service with Formica and I retired in 85. So 46 I'd start with Formica. And I'd come back in at the beginning of 44. So this training period covered from 44 to the beginning of 46.
Had you wanted to go into action again?
Not especially. And of course, Cecilia didn't want me to go. I was planning to do it when I came back because Cecilia and I argued. I think for that first week we were back because I was saying, well, we'll have to wait to get married until the war finishes because I'm going back. She said, you're going back. She's a Pacific, she's a, well, there was a, I don't know, it was just one of these things between a young wife.
When were you demobbed?
When? Well, I've got to try and find something that I can hang on to, in the sense that, I think I started at Formica round about June 46. And I think I was demobbed about 3 months before then. So it would be January, March.
What is or was the demob procedure for an officer?
I went to Chelmsford, I think. I was called to go there. And I took all kit that I had and handed it all in, signed, and was issued with the long johns and vest and a suit. Tie, collar, an overcoat, and a hat. It looked like something, you know, that from the movies. That was it. And
had you a medical before you left the army, or at the time of your demob?
I think I had.
Were your wounds given you any problems at all?
No. None at all. None at all.
After demob, obviously you returned home. What happened to you then?
Well, we had a young son. The first thing that happened to me, I went up to the university where there was an organization for sort of re-establishing graduates from the college into likely sort of posts. And the man who interviewed me had been in the colonial service. So he's interviewing me in the sense that I'd been an ex-infantry officer and a zoologist. And he says, I've got the very job for you. He says, what about fisheries officer on Lake Victoria? I said, well, that sounds something. Where is Lake Victoria, you know, and what is she? And tell me more about it. And Lake Victoria, Nyanza. Evidently, there was a post where you were in command of about 100 King's African Rifles and 2, 3, or 4 boats. And your responsibility, or my responsibility, was to be in charge of all aspects of the fishing on that lake, which included things like restocking the fish, stopping poaching, going around the fish market, around the villages, there, and seeing that it was all done the way it should have been done, and generally keeping things ticking over. And I said, well, now, that sounds the job. He says, it's got good prospects. Think seriously about it. He said, you'll get in, you know. He says, accepting the interview, it depends on an interview, which won't be now the end of this year. That is after July, August time, when other people have come out of the universities, have graduated. The intake starts from there. You'll be in. Fill the form in. So while I was waiting at the top of the street to catch the bus to go up for this interview, I wanted a light to my cigarette, my inevitable cigarette. And there was this chap standing beside me with the horn rimmed glasses. I said, you know, do you have a cigarette lighter? Would you mind? And he said, not at all, and got on chatting. And he got off at this factory, the Formica factory, and went across. And that must have registered with me, because coming down in the bus, I saw that there was smoke coming out of the factory chimney. So I thought, well, wait a minute. This is April or May now. I've got to find a job. I not know whether I've got a job until September or so. And I've got a wife and a son to keep. So I thought, and was sat, Cecilia and I sat, and this house had been flat during the war. There was somebody in occupation of this ground part. And Cecilia's father was renting the top part, and we were staying there. There's plenty of rooms, you see. And we worked it out, you know, if we paid so much for our board and so much for our food and got the baby to look after, and da-da-da-da. I worked out that if I could get between £5 and £6 a week doing anything, we could exist. Not that I got a big, you know, bounty or pension or whatever you call it. And so I went along to the labour exchange and see if there's anything going. And I said, well, look, give me a card or an introduction to the factory at the Coast Road. I see it's working. And, you know, the
pulled my leg about an infantry major who could only, they said, well, what can you do? I said, well, I can do anything. I can sweep the floor. I can drive a bus, you know, who had no skill, as they said. So I went up and the personnel officer said, wait a minute, Mr. White. I'll go and get our technical manager. And it was the bloke that lit my cigarette, you see, John Jaggs. And we had a long chat. And he says, you'll be the first graduate we've got, you know, in the factory. I said, well, you know. So I said, all I'm looking for is a fiver a week, take on anything that you think I can do. And that was the start of it. And after a month there, because it was expanding, you know, I was offered a staff job, which I took. And then after 2 or 3 months, I was promoted. After 4 or 5 months, the Mau Mau started bashing them about in Lake Victoria, Nyanza. So I thought, no, I'm happy here. And squashed the, wrote a letter and sort of thanked them. And that was the beginning, and then started so very different, a life so very different to being a soldier. Because everybody was just coming out. It's a factory, a company called Delarue. The banknote printing people, they were diversifying, and they built this factory up on Tyneside to make laminated plastic insulating boards. And of course, we just got that going when we had an opportunity to find, we had a bid or whatever you do against competition to get the rights for manufacturing and marketing for Mica the decorative stuff. See, we were called Delarue, and it was at this point where we started, and the name of for Mica came into being. Just after the war, of course, everybody wanted the Formiga for their kitchens and that. And again, I got further promotions to till you know, made the first piece of Formiga that big, and had the.
And you stayed with them, of course, until you retired.
Oh yes.
Well, didn't mention actually, it is part of the after-war years. But you got into some kind of organization to help the Italians who had helped you down Italy.
Ah, yes. Well, it all started. Ian produced this book. But, of course, he, for one thing and another, it was, you know, late in relative to the story. It was sort of published about 3 years ago. And immediately, Ian published his book, he was contacted by this an organization based on those prisoners of war who got out of been released from the prisoner of war camp PG-49 at Fontanellato, and who had made their way back home through Italy, from the north of Italy, back to rejoin our troops on their own steam, as it were, by various means, walking, for example, in our case, and who had relied on the generosity of the native people to make their walk, the escape possible. And those people who had successfully walked back after release from the camp, had been collected together and formed a trust named the Monte San Martino Trust, with the object, the prime object, of recompensing in some way those people who had been so generous with the help when the help was needed. Indeed, most of us who had done the walk agreed that it wouldn't have been at all possible if the contadini, the farmer, had been aggressively against us and hadn't supported us. So this trust, it meets formally, certainly at least once a year, when we discuss the general business, and raises all those of us who have care to and join the trust, pay whatever we can afford, and have an annual get together where we meet in London, and as ever, have a talk over our stories and watch how well we're getting together. And the monies collected by the trust goes to in the form of bursaries and scholarships to assist the children of this group of people to further their education. And the trust is supervised by, it's got full charitable association, and it's supervised by the names, the great names, so some of them, and I believe the ambassador at Rome is in some way co-opted to the dispersal of the bursaries to the people, the children.
Do you get any feedback from those people to you?
Well, in the sense that, remember, this is the beginning of my second year. I was at the dinner last, whenever, October. But of course, I was meeting people when I went down to the dinner that I hadn't seen for 50 years, over 50 years. And there was only one or two that I remembered. One person was—he was just the same. He hadn't changed a scrap in 50 years, and he'd had mixed fortunes. I forget what it was. His dad was insisting he became a banker, and he got out of that as quickly as he could, and went and was virtually the footman at the Savoy Hotel. But over the years, he became the manager of the Savoy Hotel. He just retired. But that is the sort of feedback, the stories of the various people, as we're undoubtedly widening the as more people are being dug up, as it were, to join the trust.